Councilman Sheldon, co-chairman, Councilman Jay Street, Councilman Tackett, and myself, Bill Bell. What's your pleasure with the minutes of the previous meeting?
Motion approved.
Second.
Motion made and seconded to approve the minutes of the previous meeting. All those in favor signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Those opposed, so carry. We have some ordinances. One will actually come up this evening for a vote. The other four, which Councilman Street and I will present, will be coming up for a vote the next meeting, but in light of the fact that we do not have another Public Safety Committee meeting between now and June 24th, they were placed on as agenda items today. The first is Ordinance 14-057 to be voted on this evening to revise Chapter 6, Buildings and Structures, and Chapter 16, Fire Prevention, Protection, and Administration of the Volunteer Fire Service Assistance Fund of the Newcastle County Code regarding schedule of permit fees and the administration of the Volunteer Fire Service Assistance Fund. I, along with Councilman Smiley, are both sponsors, and we had discussions when we were going through our budget deliberations and some of the things that were taking place and discussed down in Dover on how we may come up with some alternative funding that could assist with the with our fire service in the county in the future. And you know, as part of our budget passage, we did approve a 10% increase in the grant and aid funding. However, this particular piece of legislation, and I extend my sincerest appreciation to Councilman Smiley. He had contacted me, and we were talking about the building permit fee, which was passed a few years down in Dover. The enabling legislation started out at a 0.25% and enabled Newcastle County and the other two counties. Along the way, they could raise it up 0.25% to 0.5%. Last year, Finance advised that, and once again, I give a lot of credit to Councilman Smiley. It provided about $441,000 in building permit fees that was distributed amongst the 21 companies, and I believe it ended up being about $21,000 per company for the year, that $441,000. This particular piece of legislation, enabling legislation from the state, would raise the building permit fee by 0.25% for this particular fund, and as Councilman Smiley presented, that it could in fact double the building permit fee funding for the fire service over the next year. So with that, like I say, I can't thank enough our chairman of well, actually both chairmen of the Finance Committee, but in particular, Councilman Smiley. We sit here at a lot of different meetings, and he goes back after things are discussed, sorts through things, takes a look at things that we may be possibly able to do without having to go back down to Dover and everything. And I thank him for bringing this to my attention and both of us sponsoring this particular piece of legislation. So, Councilman, did you want to comment or elaborate?
No, I'm good. I think you covered it. Thank you.
Councilman Carty.
Yes, I too would like to extend my thanks to Councilman Smiley. He's obviously a mind that can store a lot of information and finding this little, you know, gem to help further support the Volunteer Fire Service. You know, I'm going to support this piece of legislation tonight, and it's substantive, and it will provide you know, measurable help to the Volunteer Fire Service in the performance of their fire safety mission.
Thank you.
Could I join you as co-sponsor?
Absolutely.
Thank you.
I'd like to co-sponsor this.
Thank you. Councilman Hollins, President Pro Tem, I'm sorry.
I
I guess the one concern I have is the meeting we had a few weeks ago regarding the fire service and the funding. There was an agreement among a number of council members that we would do another study of the funding of the fire service, and I believe the director of public safety agreed to be a part of that. And to some extent, I think this appears to me that it could be a little premature, because there's still legislation floating around Dover in terms of how Dover is going to provide additional enabling legislation to subordinate governments to support the fire service. And I'm wondering, doing this today, what happens when Dover decides whatever it is they're going to do, because they keep changing, because the lobby in Dover keeps changing. But it just seems to me that they're very hell-bent on putting something on Newcastle County to garner more financial support for the fire service. And I think that in lieu of not doing any kind of a study whatsoever, we did increase the budget by 10% for the volunteer fire services, which I think equated to about $150,000. And what's happening here tonight will be an additional $400,000 at least, which means it'll be a total of $800,000. So I'm just wondering, just how far are we going to go with this before we actually do some sort of evaluation or analysis of the service, or we're going to continue to come back with some measure of funding without any kind of evaluation of the fire service? They provide a very valuable service, no doubt. No one can doubt that. But I think there are certain efficiencies that we're overlooking, and we're willing to say, okay, they need more money. And I think when they were here before, I think the information that was provided was not complete information. It was good information, but I think there was a lot of other things going on that were left out in terms of the real value of the fire service. I understand some of the companies are not doing very well. Some are doing exceedingly well. But I just feel that we have a responsibility to at least have some evaluation of what that service is, how we can make it more efficient in working with them, as opposed to just, as some people say, throw money after because people are asking for money without us doing anything whatsoever other than finding a way to give them more money. And I think whenever we do that, it is a cost to somebody. And as I read the legislation, I think there's a protection for affordable housing and nonprofits, but there's still a payment for small business people that are trying to create jobs. And when you add all these additional costs up, whether it be a tax or a fee, I think it impacts small businesses. So I think we need to look at this in a comprehensive fashion. But more importantly, I think that we have a responsibility to look a little bit harder at our volunteer fire service, because I don't think it's going to get any cheaper. And if we're just going to continue to roll out money every time there's a request for money, I'm just not so certain if that's the responsible thing to do without at least having some sort of evaluation of the performance in terms of as it relates to efficiencies of the fire companies.
Councilman Smyth?
Yeah. I appreciate Councilman Hollins' comments, and I agree with the evaluation to be done. My purpose, I will tell you now, in reaching out to Councilman Bell early on, this was done before the fire service came before us, this was done during the budget deliberations that I reached out. What was and is to basically a preemptive strike. I mean, I've had discussions with some down in legislative hall. This authority was already given. It was right. Sitting there from the state to go from a quarter to a half percent, which they hadn't done. My anticipation, and hopefully based on some conversations I've had, it will come to fruition, was that by taking this action, there would be no other action towards Newcastle County during this legislative session, which would give us the downtime not only to work with the volunteer fire companies, but to work with the state legislature going forward to look for a funding as well as evaluate all the funds. And I will tell you, the legislation, you know, the synopsis and everything is the standard language that went with the quarter percent. But I will tell you what I said to Councilman Bell when I first spoke with him, and as I, you know, as I'm sure the volunteer fire department has either already been told or will be told, that my hope would be that given the case that was before this council for the ambulance service and everything that they provide being underfunded is that they will take and channel these funds to those fire departments that provide that service that need the additional funding. So that's my hope. That's it. And one thing that this message just does send to the state legislature for this, which they know because they did the quarter to half, is unlike the bump to the 10%, that's a one-time thing. This, unless council goes back and votes to change it at another time, is a revenue stream that's there based on billing, and I hopefully it will continue to tick up. But I agree, the evaluation needs to be done.
Councilman, just to add on to that, and I don't disagree with anything Councilman Hollins has said. I think this year especially, what I think has been brought to light is that it's a two-way street. We need to turn around and have cooperation between the fire service and the government. There should be discussions that should be ongoing as to what the needs are and how we can accomplish sustaining and maintaining those needs. To arbitrarily go to Dover to get something passed that could impact the citizens of our county as far as taxation or anything else, those type of discussions should be held on a county level first before folks are going down to Dover. The one thing that I think was of interest, which is very interesting with this, is Councilman Smiley said the grant and aid is voted on each year as to whether there be an increase or how much of an increase. This particular legislation was passed in both the other in the state for both the other counties as well as Newcastle County. And looking at the building permit fee, I think it was speaking in a lot of senses to the fact that with the increase in building, whether it be, you know, a development or whether it be, you know, a some other facility that's being built, that the building permit fee would help with being able to provide expanded service in the future to meet the needs of growth and everything. So, and as Councilman Smiley had mentioned, that if this were passed for the 0.5%, you know, we could not go further than that because the enabling legislation was 0.5%. But it does enable us to go ahead and have a substantial funding source that would be consistent in future years based upon what development would be. There is no guarantee that this next year that it would generate twice the amount because, quite frankly, we don't know what the, you know, what the building would be. I think Councilwoman Kilpatrick, and then Councilman Powers.
Thank you. I think you answered most of my questions. My question originally was about that this past year the increase was a one-time increase, correct? And this would give us a funding line from which we would draw for the grants to the volunteer fire companies. And just as a point of clarification, if we already had something based on permit fees, if we already had a percentage based on permit fees, my presumption is when the economy got bad, that line also went down because we were giving out less fees. Is that correct?
Yeah,
that we're kind of looking to make that up with less building?
That is correct. And, you know, the initial 0.25% was put in place to be enabling legislation for the county to begin generating some additional funds. Those funds are collected and then dispersed semi-annually to the 21 volunteer fire departments. So what happens is they would, whatever's in that particular account would be distributed amongst the 21 fire companies twice a year. But you're absolutely correct. I mean, I think it's based on the fact that there were times over the last few years when construction wasn't that substantial and certainly the funding was less. But it does give us an avenue to have some sustained funding and assist with future growth as it takes place in the county.
And I do agree that we do need to have some sort of study or something looked at. I mean, we know that we've got areas in the county that are more financially able to support the fire companies with the donations in other areas that aren't. So I think we maybe need to look at that and somehow figure out the equalization process, the leveling process.
Councilman Power.
I'm just trying to remember. I think, isn't this on permits that are not on new housing because we have impact fees on new housing? And partly, because we went to Dover, part of it was to try to get it to the companies that don't have all the development going on, say it's Middletown, that has a lot of influx of money, that to get to 5 points, because there's still projects going on, but no new construction.
You are correct.
So I just make sure I was, thank you.
Yeah, there is a building fee that is collected, and that building impact fee today goes towards, like, if companies were to add a new apparatus, additional apparatus above and beyond what they have, and we've had some discussions, preliminary discussions even about that fund, that it initially was for growth as far as construction and building, and the money would go to fund additional equipment above and beyond what they have. Well, what has happened now is it's not always the question of equipment or stations. Now it's the question of having to pay personnel for the operations to respond. So one of the things that we probably could revisit in a spirit of cooperation would be is to could that funding also be made available for the operational needs for paid personnel for emergency medical and everything.
You know, one thing, Councilman Bowers, I just
Councilman Bowers.
Just for the record, I think that's partly why we're seeing and knowing and working with fire companies is it, some of this money, that's the only thing they can spend on. And there's somebody says, why do we have so many new houses or additions, is if they got the building going on, that's the only thing they really can spend that money on, is buying apparatus or building a building.
And I believe the administration, in cooperation with council, has asked Joe Abele and finance to kind of take a look at the way it's set up today, and if there could be any changes made to make that available. And it also answers the thing that, you know, they've got apparatus where they take a ladder apparatus and have to have it refurbished, and sometimes, and inspected and eventually even refurbished instead of renewing. And that sometimes costs millions of dollars to do that, to keep it operational.
Yes, it does.
Any other questions of council? Councilman Hollins.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. And I agree with most of what has been said. I recognize that the money in this year's budget is considered to be one time, but it's one time for the most part in every budget. So it depends on how much pressure comes back in next year's budget or the budget after that. And I guess my real concern is what I said earlier, is that is this going to be an ongoing, are we going to have some measure of efficiencies at all, or are we going to continue to respond in this way? And even though I know that this piece of legislation, to some extent, will try to put the brakes on Dover, and it may not, because there are people in Dover who have a plethora of pieces of legislation to deal with this issue, and knowing Dover, they're going to put most of this back on us. They're not going to come forward to fund the fire companies to the extent they want to be funded. They'll tell us to do it, or they'll make us do it. And one of the pieces of legislation that they're considering is that they would determine the percentage that Newcastle County would pay to the volunteer fire company. So you have all those things going on out there, and in some cases we may not have an option. And I don't know how we communicate this to the volunteer fire services, that, you know, this is just not the manner, I feel at least, that it's responsible for us to respond in this way when we essentially don't get involved with the operations at all. And we have the same problem with the Wilmington Library, so I don't mean to pick on anybody, but the fact of the matter is, when we are funding, and we are primary major funding source, it just seems to me that there needs to be some evaluation that we talked about at an earlier meeting, where we would actually evaluate for our purposes, for this government's purposes, to the extent that we see efficiencies, and how can we help the fire companies to make recommendations how they can save, because that's what we're all doing now. Everybody's cutting back. Everybody, I mean, we have people who are working for the government who has gone without increases and so forth. So there's got to be some measures there that I believe, you know, when you say some are failing and some are not, there's a reason for that. You know, do we need X number of houses and all those kinds of things, that we just can't look the other way and continue to fund without doing some evaluation of what we're funding.
And I, once again, I don't think anybody would disagree. I think what we need to do is probably develop more of a long-range plan, take a look at where we are today, similar to the comprehensive plan, in a sense, to kind of take a look at what the needs are going to be, how we're delivering it today. And there's a multitude of answers in different areas, like why maybe a company is doing better than maybe another company. And it has to do a lot of times with area, with what they're protecting and everything. So I wouldn't disagree with anything that's been said. I think that this discussion point should continue. The county executive, the administration, meets on a regular basis with the fire service leadership. I've had, and I know Councilman Smiley has had, conversation with the executive over the fact that there needs to be some substantial meetings sitting around the table and talk about what the needs are and where we're going in the future. And like I say, I think the thing is that there are some things that we may even support as far as in Dover. But we also don't need legislation placed upon the government when there may be alternatives that we could come up with, similar to what Councilman Smiley come up with the quarter percent. Any other discussion on this particular ordinance? All right. As I mentioned, ordinance 14060. 61 and 62, in fact, I think 63, are being read in and briefly discussed here. They will come up for a vote at the June 24th meeting. Ordinance 14-060 is amend the annual FY 2015 operating budget, reduce the FY 2015 appropriation to the Department of Public Safety Office of Emergency Management by $411,381 to provide the annual county grant, or annual county match, I stand corrected, for the Office of Emergency Management grant for FY 2015. Director, if we read this right, this is basically our match for emergency management as far as federal funding, as well as I believe we get some matching funding also from the nuclear power plant and different entities.
Director Bryant, yes, that's correct.
It's almost as per title.
Sounds good.
Sure and sweet. Okay. Any discussion or comment, any questions on that particular ordinance? Okay, with that, I'll read the next one, and Councilman Street and our public safety representatives that are here can address it if need be. Ordinance 14-061, amend the grants budget, appropriate $472,000 for the FY 2015 to the contracted police duty revolving fund for the Department of Public Safety. Councilman.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Mr. Director, I'm assuming, correct me if I'm wrong, that this anticipates that we're going to probably have $472,000 worth of contracted police work in this appropriation funding for it, so that it's available and follows the process that we vigorously went through and came to an agreement on a year or so ago.
Director Bryant, that's correct.
Yeah. What do you think, Councilman Smiley? It's getting better, isn't it?
Very good. 2 minutes.
Okay. Any question or any comment? Okay, hearing none. Actually, ordinance 14-02 is a ordinance that's kind of reliant on ordinance 14-060. It is to amend the grant budget, appropriate $258,000 in federal funding from the Department of Homeland Security Federal Emergency Management Agency, FEMA, $411,381, which was discussed in ordinance 14-060, in local funding from Newcastle County, and $47,112 in private funding from the Public Service Enterprise Group, PSE&G Nuclear, to fund the operation of the Office of Emergency Management, OEM, for FY 2015. And I think we would say as per title on that. Any question? Councilman Cartier.
What is the status of these federal funds? Are they holding steady? Or are we suffering cuts? Or are we getting increases?
My knowledge is, I'm sorry.
Year to year?
Jeff Miller, Communications, speaking on behalf of Dave Carpenter, our OEM manager who could not be here today. That the money has stayed steady from last year. There's been no increase. And as Council Bell stated, 60 releases the money, and -62 gives us the opportunity to spend the money in conjunction with the 258 federal funding and their sale of nuclear plant funding as well, to spend that for the office operations, salaries, and education for radiological emergencies. So I hope that answers your question.
Any further questions? Okay, hearing none, ordinance 14-063, amend the grants budget, appropriate $41,100 in special law enforcement assistance funds, SLEAF, from the State of Delaware Department of Justice to the Department of Public Safety, SLEAF, computer, write blocker software, and server grant. Councilman Street.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Mr. Director, I'm assuming that this is money appropriated to us from the state, and specifically this grant is for computer software and things that we have to utilize in fighting crime that requires technology and the use of computers, because there's a whole lot of crime and terrible things going on that we have to address. The genesis of is over the internet.
It's exactly correct, Chief Setting, County Police. This computer software gives us the ability to investigate child pornography. Those who possess it, trade it, and create it, and we have to have a certain amount of cover when we do that.
Any question from council? Okay, hearing none, we've set up today Councilman Smiley.
Just before you went on to number 8, I just wanted to let the co-chairs know, I don't anticipate anything, but if anything does come up on these four pieces that feel that they need to be vetted further, please feel free to contact my aide and we can put them on the finance agenda for the 24th, because she has nothing to do.
Okay, thank you, Councilman. Next up, we've asked First Aid Animal Care to come today and make a presentation. It's been a while since we've had a presentation on what's occurring in our county, and maybe some of the statistics and how the service is going. The other thing that's not included in there, but the swearing in of some of the animal care and control officers as
constables.
I guess right, constables. Okay, which, if I understand that correctly, permits them to carry a weapon. No?
No.
Okay. So you're not going to be carrying weapons. That's all.
They take pit bulls with them.
Okay, with that.
Kevin Usselton, I'm Executive Director of the First Aid Animal Center and SPCA, and I'm very happy to introduce to you Captain Warburton. She joined our agency as of March 10th this year, and she took Major Whipple's place, and so she'll be directing our animal control efforts for the entire state of Delaware since we took over Wilmington this year. So passing around is a copy of our statistics. I'll begin with our statewide, since we're doing the whole state, but these are from 2013, so that you can see in 1 year's time, our agency, and this is without Kent County in some places, 356,000 miles we drove our vehicles, providing animal control services to the state of Delaware, answering a total of 9,831 calls for dog control, specifically quarantining in-house 1,034 dogs, with a grand total of bites and responses of 12,257 cases. When on the next page is specifically to New Castle County. As you can see, the calls are broken out into, we did 168 agency assistance. So that is if there's a fire in the house, if the police respond to a call and there's an animal issue, if code enforcement goes to a call and there are animal issues, they call us and ask us to assist to remove the animals or to help confine the animals, etc. So we did 168 of those in 2013. We picked up 906 dogs that the residents had found and asked us to come and pick up. We responded to 1,430 calls for dogs at large. I thought it was important for you to see how New Castle County, with your population being the largest in the state, in relation to what was happening in the rest of the state, how your calls differentiate from that. Your service totals were 4,957 dog assistance, dog control calls for 2013. And for a total grand total with bites, your county is victim to has the most bite victims in it, which would be subjective to having more of a population, and that was 1,352 bites total, for a grand total of service calls for 6,309, and a total mileage of 182,176 miles answering those. So do you have any questions on the statewide?
Councilman Cartier?
I was going to go to the county, our county.
Okay, you want to go to that? Yeah. That's the next page.
So you do wildlife calls, nuisance wildlife.
We do wildlife calls for rabies. So if you're bitten by a raccoon or a fox, we'll come and pick up that animal and submit it for testing. So you can see 24 rats were abandoned at Concord Pet Store in Middletown in an aquarium. So we were lucky enough to pick those up, and we adopted every single one of those out.
Help me freaking please.
They were domestic rats.
Help
not
well, rats are freaking rat. Unless it's a muskrat.
You can also see that if you're urban, we still picked up a pig.
Where'd you get
the pig? Was from Townsend.
Oh, Lord, don't tell him that.
He
wants to put in an application.
It wasn't my pig.
The pig got a lot of attention and was adopted.
By a butcher shop.
I guess from a standpoint of budgetary and everything, and I know we have administrative personnel here, what does our contract, our newest contract with Delaware Animal Care and Control run a year for New Castle County?
It's $1,035,000.
Okay, $1,035,000.
And that covers dog control officers being on call on the road from 6 a.m. to 11 p.m. at night, 7 days a week.
And I guess that I just bring this out for consideration in the future when we discuss path forwards and future planning, is that particular amount of money is with no assistance from the state of Delaware. That is New Castle County funding, taxpayer funding. And, I think that this is another area when we talk about animal care and control, we're very limited as to our options as far as who provides animal care and control in our county and in our state. And as the costs increase, I think that we, if there's not some relief that's given from the state, that certainly we're going to have to be taking a look and evaluating, you know, are we getting the best bang for our buck? How do we deal with it in the future and everything? So, you know, that's a lot of money. And I would, I don't assume anything. I know for a fact that it increases, continues to increase. So it is a significant cost on the taxpayers of this county for animal care and control.
We just went through a kind of synopsis with the Office of Animal Welfare has created a document and submitted it to the governor for their office to assume the responsibility for dog control. So I don't know what the timeline is for that to actually occur, or if it even will occur, or whether or not it will go the opposite way, that the counties will again be asked to assume more responsibility because of laws that have been passed to protect animals and the citizens that care for them. So who knows at this point whether or not your cost is going to be lessened or added to based on that office. They're saying that it's not going to impact you. There are bills before now to talk about certification of animal control officers, that the state is going to pay for that certification. Right now we have a 3-month on the job training for animal control officers, so we're looking at making that a little bit more formalized so that we can comply with that regulation without additional cost passed to you. We understand that this is a huge expense to provide. We have looked at every single cost that we pass on to the counties for providing the service. Really, it's handling the animals that come from these dog control contracts that cost so much. It costs literally $13 a night to house a dog in Newcastle County to provide easy assistance for the residents to get their dogs. So we understand that it's really expensive, and we've looked at everything trying to pass the real cost to you and not some inflated number.
Councilman Powers?
What does it cost when you're in your own facility?
It's roughly the same because of our insurance that we have to carry and the employees' cost to house and care for the animals.
So who you're contracted with, I guess, on Pleasant Valley Road is the same.
Right.
Same cost.
And we've tried to, that cost has remained the same since this contract started. So the owner of the kennel has never increased his fee for that kennel since the time of this contract in 2007, I think it is. On the last page, you'll see where we stand to date with your calls. A total of 16,043. And this is January through May of 30th. On the very last page, right there. So the one thing that we've noticed historically is that our number of bites and aggressive animals is going up this year. We're not sure why that is. Most of the bites that we're addressing, which is not paid for by your contract, but paid for by a contract with the health department to investigate and quarantine all the animals, is that most of those bites are occurring in the family home. Whether it be a family member or a visitor to the home, they're the ones who are being subjected to the bites. And so we're trying to be a little bit more proactive and let people know you shouldn't let your dog run at large, and you shouldn't let your dog, if you know it's going to bite, be around strangers who come into your household or be unattended with children. We've had one dangerous dog case, which was a mastiff. Out of Newark, who was declared dangerous and ordered euthanized, and he was euthanized after he attacked. We have another case coming up later this month where a child was attacked in Edgemoor Gardens. So we recognize that public safety is a huge factor in what we do, and we want to make sure that we're handling those calls efficiently and effectively and making sure that we can prevent as many cases of animal bites as we can.
Councilman Taggart, Councilman Hollins, and President Bolton.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Kevin, you referenced that committee, and I know I worked on this, it's probably been about 4 or 5 years ago now or whatever, but does anybody sit on that committee now from Newcastle County, or is it still
That committee is gone now. So that committee wrote a recommendation to the governor, and that's what created the Office of Animal Welfare, which is a state-funded position. It's four positions at $500,000. So they'll have someone to inspect the four shelters that are in the state of Delaware, and they'll have somebody running the spay-neuter program that used to be at the Department of Agriculture, an administrative assistant.
Oh, no, I meant the Dangerous Dog Committee, the one that evaluated the...
Dangerous Dog Committee has people from the Kennel Club. It has Dr. Jones from the Red Line Emergency Clinic, but nobody from Newcastle County, right? Remember?
I can't answer that for you, Councilman.
Because I think we actually worked on this.
Right. Well, actually, I was representative for Newcastle County.
It's me.
Marlene, Godwin is the... please stand and identify yourself. You went that way.
Button,
that's
so
okay.
Hal Godwin from Sussex County and Michael Pettit-DeMond from Kent County. We've worked with Hetty Brown, who's the new director of the Office of Animal Welfare, to reestablish the dog control panel, because under Subchapter 2 of Title 9, Chapter 9, I believe.
Chapter 9.
The counties are responsible for the dangerous, or the dog control panel, as well as for dog control. So the panel did exist and was populated a little up until a little after dog control was put onto the counties, but after 2011 it kind of dissipated because there wasn't a central mechanism for coordinating the counties together to maintain. So with Hetty's appointment to the Office of Animal Welfare, we've been able to work together to repopulate that dog panel, because I know First State has had some issues with cases they've had when there hasn't been a panel, it was difficult to prosecute those cases and charge for dangerous or potentially dangerous dogs. So now that's been established, and it's a standalone independent panel. There are five designated members. One is a veterinarian, one's a police officer, one's an animal behavioralist, one is a breeder, and there's one more I can't put my finger on at the moment. But there is not a particular county representative. The county representatives convene, whether in person or by email, to elect five panel members and then their alternates.
And that's you?
For Newcastle County.
Right. And then, just quickly, a second question. Kevin, I know years ago they used to hold, like, shot clinics and stuff in here and try to do licensing and stuff like that. I noticed that hasn't really been done by, you know, your agency, but the local ones have done it. Is that just something you guys have kind of phased out of doing in Newcastle County?
Because when we used to be called Kent County, nobody ever knew that we were ever coming up here, because they just assumed we only did Kent County. So then... the other three agencies which are up here have been offering shot clinics, so they've been doing it, so we don't want to infringe on, they use it as a revenue stream for cash, and so we don't want to step on their toes by coming up here. So that's one of the reasons why we haven't been up here doing vaccination clinics. We are, as a agency, doing a Rachel Ray Challenge, which is a national challenge. We are one of 50 shelters across the state, which is trying to do more adoptions in the months of June, July, and August. And I believe that you all should have received an invitation to our open house announcing that. So we're trying to win $100,000 and get some recognition for Delaware being a great place to be an animal welfare agency. I'm doing that, so that's one of the things that we are doing. We've been up here doing adoptions, and I think that we've done probably 15. But just since January, we've adopted 152 animals out to Newcastle County residents. So we want to show that we are doing across the state. Of those, 20 were cats, 116 were dogs, but the interesting thing was that 16 were other animals. They were parakeets. They were some of the rats that we got from Newcastle County. And the pot-bellied pig that made the paper a couple of times, she found a home in Townsend, so she's one of them in Newcastle County. We've transferred 17 animals from our organization to other organizations in Newcastle County. Out of 1,197 animals that we've taken in from Newcastle County, we've euthanized 166 of those. So that number has decreased over the time as we got more aggressive about doing some of our adoptions.
And what has to be done prior to euthanization? Is there any particular criteria. Could you explain that real briefly?
Sure. So one of the national models is to do an evaluation on dogs called a SAFER test, and that's where the dog is tested with how it reacts when you touch its food, how you touch its feet, how the dog reacts to another dog. So we use that as a basis. If the dog does not pass that evaluation, it can go out to a rescue list, and that's where we offer dogs to other rescue organizations for rehabilitation or for more socialization, and we do that at no fee to the other rescue. So they get the animal for free, they can rehabilitate the animal and put it up for adoption. If no rescue comes forward for the animal, and we also post all stray animals on Craigslist and on our website trying to find the owners of those animals. And we have one of the highest return to owner rates on the East Coast, because every shelter microchips, which is a big help when we're finding animals. We can scan it and take it right back home. We don't ever have to bring it to the shelter. Or we can contact the owner and have them come in. So that those things all help us with our efforts.
So who makes the final decision as far as whether an animal is euthanized or not?
It can be our veterinarian, who signs off on the animal due to health and or aggression. And then if no rescues come forward, then our shelter director of operations signs off on it.
She's still around.
President Pro Tem Hollins.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I just want to get some clarity around which animals are covered that we pay for the service, because I recall a constituent being here very concerned because there was a rabid animal in the community, and it was determined that it's not a service that we pay for. I believe it was referred to DENREC, but I noticed there's 16 other animals that you are providing services for. So are we limited to dogs, or do we do...
Newcastle County, your contract is limited to dogs. There are other animals that we as an agency provide for when needed. So if you're bitten by a cat, we set traps for that cat. But if you suspect the cat has rabies, the state refuses to test the cat, so we don't respond to those. So our rabies control, which is, you'll see animals that we go after, those are only animals that have impacted a human by a bite. If it's only suspected, we don't get involved with that.
Gotcha. Thank you.
And the same, there's a lot of controversy right now because there's dog-on-dog attacks that are happening. If the two dogs are on a leash, it's not covered under our legal jurisdiction. If one of the dogs is running loose, that dog is under our jurisdiction because it's running loose. So it is very confusing to people, because it's the Department of Agriculture that responds, but they'll send you a letter for dog-on-dog attack if both owners had control of the dog when they got it.
Okay. Councilman Retta? Councilman Retta, then Co-Chairman Street.
Go ahead first.
Yeah, you're on.
Thank you. You just said about the one dog's on a leash and the other one isn't. What happens to the one that isn't? What happens to the owner, or do they get fined?
They get fined. If we can prove that the dog was in violation of the law, they get a fine.
It's running loose. It's in violation of the law.
But somebody
right?
has to testify that they saw the dog running loose. We can't just, because it happened, we can't just say that. We have to go into court and prove beyond a doubt that the dog was running loose.
Okay. If somebody's walking their dog on a leash and another dog that's not on a leash attacks it,
then the owner oftentimes says, yes, I'll testify in court that dog was running loose, and so we use their testimony to prove guilty. But a lot of people don't want to go to court, and so then we don't have a witness to the dog running at large.
So then they call us, and then we call you about the same incident.
Right. And if there's a repeated pattern, we always go to the person's house and say, listen, we got a complaint that your dog was running at large. It's a violation of county code and state law. Please keep your dog confined. And by the way, do you have a license? So we investigate and respond to all of those complaints. And if we see a pattern of complaints about a single household, then we sort of flag that and say, look, these people need to go into court. But oftentimes what happens is there's a hole in the fence, and the dog all of a sudden is getting out repeatedly, and the owner isn't fast enough to correct that problem before we keep getting calls, and the dog is a nuisance in the neighborhood. So we try to address those as fast as we can. sometimes it's neighbor against neighbor, but oftentimes it's just a bad dog who has outwitted its owner and gotten to do something that it shouldn't have done.
Well, usually I never see a dog with another animal open up a gate. I mean, it's usually
they can do it, trust me.
Yeah, I know, but it's usually left open.
Right. Most of the time it's
somebody. And they're out running around.
Captain Sherry Warburton, also just to follow up on that, if there's been prior complaints and there has been a prior bite, the Newcastle County does have a vicious dog at large law, and if we cite the owner for vicious dog, go to court, then automatically that dog would be deemed dangerous and they have to follow special guidelines, such as dog would have to be leashed and on a muzzle when it goes outside. It has to have a primary enclosure if they take it outside. So there are special conditions to people who do have dogs that attack other dogs, and we can declare them vicious in lieu of going to the dog panel. So for repeat offenders, we do look at the, you know, how many times this dog has bitten or if it's bitten before, how bad the bite has been. Those are all factors that determine either we would go with the vicious dog or now we can seize the dog from dangerous dog panel. For bites that are severe, causing severe physical injury to humans.
Okay, I got one more question. What does a fine start at if they have to get fined?
For the state code, for dog at large, it starts at a $25 fine. For the Newcastle County dog at large, sorry, dog unrestrained, it's a $250 fine. So we usually go, we do cite people who have violated this before with the Newcastle County dog unrestrained, because that is a larger fine.
Sounds better.
Back porch.
Thank you.
Sure.
We should put them on there.
We passed around a couple citizen-type documents that have been sent to some members of council. We thought that all members of council should have a copy of it. I think there's probably a copy there for you also, Mr. Houselton. And I guess we're not going to sit here at this meeting and go over these particular complaints or inquiries, but what we have asked, I've spoken with members of our law department today, and Marlene, who has not only from our law department but also worked along with your office to research these complaints, research this information, and kind of come out with what's fact, what's fiction, and what can be done. Like I said, I know you have a picture of the dog. I've read through these documents, and we'll listen to what you have to say, and we can also counter what you have to say. But go ahead.
So this is a picture of a dog that we found running at large in Newcastle County. The dog, when the officer picked up the dog, that you can see that the dog's legs are very bloody. So the officer thought the dog had been hit by a car, and this was what we call road rash on the dog's legs. The dog was immediately taken to our partner vet specialty, where they kept the dog overnight. They tranquilized the dog and noticed that the dog was chewing on itself. So the dog came home with some, came back to the shelter with antibiotics and with a pain pill to alleviate its suffering, because the dog is incessantly just chewing on its legs. So the owner, who we talked to about paying the bill before we at the shelter saw the dog and the dog was still at the vet, the owner called because the dog's picture was posted on Facebook, trying to find the owner because we thought the dog needed intense medical treatment, which it does. So the owner came forward. We told him how much the bill would be to get the dog back. We saw the dog, and then I said, we can't get the dog back in this condition. So in these photographs, you'll see the picture of the dog when we picked it up and a picture of the dog before this owner received the dog. The dog has lost an extensive amount of weight, and its legs are much worse. I'm going to pass these around so you guys can see. I just brought one. This is an active investigation, so the owner has not been officially, he has a warrant for his arrest, but he has not turned himself in to hear his charges against him, so it's still an active case.
And we won't get into an active case other than the fact I would like to ask you that do dogs tend to chew or bite themselves on their legs or other parts of their body if, in fact, they're suffering some sort of disorder or anxiety.
It's unusual for a dog to have separation anxiety when the owner is in the room. But separation anxiety means that the dog is away from you and for extended periods of time, that it's left alone and it chews itself or the wall or something else. In my history and my experience. So this dog obviously has a medical condition that is very expensive to treat, and it has not been treated adequately for the dog, so the dog is suffering great pain.
Okay. Are there any avenues that you can utilize outside the SPCA for, let's say that it's a senior citizen that has an animal and has the animal for companionship, is there any avenues that you have to reach out to get any type of medical care or assist possibly a senior or an owner of a dog that may not be able to totally afford a condition like that?
We offer vaccination clinics, but not, this is a very extensive medical treatment that the dog is going to be required to have in order to make the dog comfortable. So we do not have anything like that. When we pick up a dog that's a stray, and we take it to the veterinarian, and the owner comes forward, because we've had about 12 dogs hit by a car recently, and the owner is responsible for the bill because the dog is theirs, and so the dog was running at large most times when it's hit by a car, so the owner is advised of the bill when they're calling. They have, if they can't afford to pay the bill, we have allowed them to pay their impound fees and make sure the dog is vaccinated and licensed before it goes home, and then they are responsible for the vet bill after that, in which if they don't pay, then it goes to collections.
We pass these out, and council can read them at their own time and everything, but I just want to let you know from the chair of the meeting that not everyone, citizens in Newcastle County, are overwhelmed sometimes with either the response they get from our contracted vendor and or the fact that there's sort of a feeling that it gets to a certain point and then it becomes animal cruelty rather than, you know, something that's happened to the animal. So we take citizen inquiries and complaints seriously. We know that there's always another side of the story and everything, and we're not going to prejudge anything. But I can tell you this from this chair, okay, that I am familiar, personally familiar, from your offices, okay, that there have been comments that have been placed on social media criticizing not only one of the complainants here, okay, but also a state senator. And the reason I bring that up is that you are contracted by Newcastle County government to provide a service at over $1 million a year to the citizens of this county. And what you do and how you represent us reflects back on this government as a whole. And like I say, there's always two sides to every story. But when I see a picture of a young lady that's bartending and it goes out in social media that this particular person is an enemy of, at that point, the Kent County SPCA, and she had, in fact, appeared before this council, when I hear of a something being put on a website about one of our state senators who is a animal advocate, you know, I think that you have to be very, very careful and considerate as to your leadership role representing this county when we're paying your particular business over $1 million a year. And I don't know any other way to put it, but any actions on the part of anyone that represents this county that reflects unfavorably back upon this county as an employer, as a a business, we take that very seriously.
Ms. Shear was on my personal page.
Let me just say this, that you, as director of the SPCA that is contracted with this county, when you start sending correspondence out to folks that have brought things before this council or appear before this council and are constituents of this council, you're treading, you need to tread a little lightly. And especially one of the most recent ones that was put out in reference to a state senator. Senator Blevins.
I don't know of any recent...
Well, I'm talking since we last met, since you were last in here. And I'm not saying it to embarrass anybody. I'm just saying it that we get called, we respond to those calls, we're accountable for those calls. And, you know, we know that there's two sides to every story, but I just caution you as a vendor of this county to represent us well.
Right. And that's why Nancy Scherer is a friend of one of my friends, and that's how her picture ended up on my personal Facebook page. It was not on the FSC Facebook page.
Okay. All right, with that.
I just have to say the same thing, because it's been three constituents that happen to be in my district, and I agree that social media is a great outlet, especially for this. I've had one missing dog for, I guess, 2 years now, we talked about, that... still out there, and they have a social media program, and people are out looking all the time. And I did, this was emailed to me, and this was also emailed to what the social media did say, and it was derogatory remarks that happened. So I know you can't take care of all employees and so forth, but what goes on that specific site, I think we do own here. So we just have to look at it more, that's all.
With that, Co-Chairman Street.
Well, I'm not going to belabor my point, but I'm not going to let this discussion come forward not without getting my licks in. You know, this council made it very clear to me that it would not consider passing anything breed specific to deal with vicious dogs and animal fighting and dog fighting. I had the legislation in for in regard to the pit bulls, and Councilman Smiley at the time was the only one I told. I knew it was going to be defeated. I felt that in the air, but I'll tell everybody now, some young boy called me, said he'd never vote for me again, and, you know, if I was all that, that I could come muzzle his pit bull, and he was going to muzzle me, and yada, yada, yada. So the point where I didn't want him to think for 1 minute that him or anybody else is going to call me talking about muzzling me and closing my mouth, and I not go forward with the legislation. However, you know, those who said that, you know, it's not the owner, it's not the dog, it's the owner. Well, I look at the number of bites, and I look at the number of court convictions. Nobody's being held accountable in any significant percentage. Nobody's being held responsible. And people's children are getting ate the hell up, and it appears that we as a government don't care. So, you know, I'm not going to keep running, ducking, playing hide and go seek, but something has to be done with these vicious dogs. They're a threat to people, children in particular, and other animals. And second, I don't care what anybody says. You can argue with me or agree with me, but for these little thugs that are protecting drugs and guns, the dog of choice is pit bull. Mm-hmm. For these little thugs who want to make a little money, gambling and doing whatever else they do, fighting dogs, the dogs that they fight are pit bulls. For the mailman, the dog that the mailman and male women fear the most are pit bulls. Now, we can keep ducking, running, hiding, playing hide-and-go-seek. That's the fact of the matter. And the dog that's eating up the most children, scaring the hell out of the most children, is pit bull. Now, how we get to it, and it's not breed-specific, I don't care, but we need to get to it. And if you look at the data we just looked at, the number of bites versus the number of convictions in court, anybody being held accountable, and we need to do something different. So, got my licks in and said my piece on that for now, but I'm just getting started.
Newcastle County does have vicious dog ordinance on the books already. That ordinance does not require dogs to be neutered, and we found that if dogs are neutered, it takes away a lot of the aggression that we're seeing with some of those dogs. So as a recommendation for providing an additional protection against more bites would be to amend your dangerous dog ordinance, vicious dog ordinance, well, is what you call it.
Co-chairman, I appreciate that suggestion. But if the dog gun bit me, the dog's already bit me, and now you're going to neuter me, how do I benefit from that? Stop the dog from biting me in the first place.
Before you get too excited, they also have that for humans on the book. I just caution you a little bit.
All right, any other...
in reference to the number of
please
bites...
Please identify yourself.
I'm sorry. That's okay. Sherry Warburton.
The
number of bites, most of the bites do occur in the home. They're family-owned dogs. So that's why, if a dog is current and it bites somebody in the home, there is no citation for them. Unless it's a, severe bite, then that's something we would look into. But then again, dogs are property, and property rights are king. So it's very difficult to prosecute somebody whose own dog bit an own family member in a severe way.
Co-Chairman Street.
Well, I'm not going to belabor my point. I think I've made my point clear, but, I just don't like the situation. It doesn't sit well with me, and then we complicate it more. And I'm not talking about last year, last week, today. Somebody put, within the last several days, a dog in the trash can outside the community center where I work, and obviously the dogs had been fighting. Somebody won, somebody lost, so they just discarded the dog that way, and then the compliment matters worse. It's rancid, and we called it 9 o'clock this morning. When I left the center at 1 o'clock, it still hadn't been picked up because, is it Public Works, SPCA, L&I, the biggest, and I'm supposed to be an inside player. All I know is, at 9 o'clock, we called, 1 o'clock when I left to come here, it's still in the trash can, so we have all kinds of issues.
Gonna go. You were up first, Councilman Tackett, and President Pro Tem.
No, that's fine. No, I was just gonna make a couple comments. That obviously, people become very passionate about animals. I mean, it is what it is. I mean, I've been in council 10 years. Two times we packed that chamber downstairs. One time was about dogs, and the other was about boats and RVs. So, I mean, it's what happens. It'll bring them out. It's very unfortunate that, at the magnitude of, the report that's been given us today is, pretty huge, and it appears that, I know we've discussed the money in $1 million and all that kind of stuff, which obviously the state took this back where it belonged and they administer where it should be and, all that, that'd be fine. We'd have another $1 million over here to address public safety and the things that, we're really should be addressing over here, but it's not, and it is what it is, and here we are. But given the report that we've seen, it appears that, they're doing a very good job. Any time that our office has ever had to engage or reach out to them, they've been very receptive, handled the issue, and addressed the public in a very professional way, which we were very pleased with. And again, it's a shame that, unfortunately, we do have a few situations that, for whatever reason, we don't have. At least, perhaps some of you may, who are your constituents, but we all don't have, like you said, both sides of that story, and hence emotions.
President Pro Tem Holland.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Yeah, I would have to agree with Councilman Street on this pit bull issue, and I agree that all of the experts say it's, you can't go forward with dog specific, but the little kid that was killed in the last couple of weeks. He was visiting with his mother, with his mother's friends. He had visited the home before, and the little boy was killed. And you saw his grandmother on the front page of the paper with his picture and so forth. He's killed. He's dead. He's done. Just last week, same thing happened with the owner of a pit bull. The pit bull turned on the owner. These may be isolated cases, but isolated is a little bit too much when someone is losing their life. So maybe to amend the code, to go with the neutered or whatever we can get passed, I think we need to do something because people are, in fact, being hurt, injured by these dogs, more so than any other dog that I've heard of, and maybe I'm under a rock or something, but what I know is that normally it's a pit bull. When these attacks occur, it's a pit bull. Personally, a pit bull ran into my yard on my property and killed my dog. These dogs can create a lot of problems to a lot of people, and I believe it's the same owner of another pit bull who actually attacked someone in the park not very far from my house. So these are the dogs that that are creating, in my opinion, in my experience, the most harm to other animals and to human beings, regardless of what the experts say.
Thank you, Councilman. Director, we'll offer you like one final comment before we go into executive session, but as far as what's being discussed, do you have any recommendation or anything that you could put together for us? Or
what we look at is that there, every breed of dog can bite, and there are some dogs that are obviously much more aggressive than others. And so pit bulls are a very heavily populated breed of dog within our state, and so therefore just by the number of them, there are more incidences with them is what we've seen. The next case we have coming up is involving Chow. So if any dog can bite, and we look at any dog as having the potential to bite, and we treat them all fairly, so we think that deal with a dog that has exhibited the behavior, notify the owner that the behavior is there. If the dog bites, then the dog, they have to pay for quarantining of the animal, and then we might possibly require them to go to a vicious level and then confine the dog. So we're aware that bites are increasing. We're trying to do everything we can to protect the public. We're in that weird position that we provide protection of animals from people, and we provide protection of people from animals. So we do both arms of that, and so sometimes we're in conflict, but we definitely are very much on top of the aggression because we've seen an increase in it in the last year.
Co-Chairman Street.
Mm-hmm.
All I'm going to say is, in my opinion, right now, and for an extended period of time, dogs have more rights and are better protected than children. And I'm sick of them. And if we don't do anything about it, then who's going to do it?
The only other two things I have are that the last time I was here was a huge issue about cats. I haven't heard anything today about cats.
He just left.
That's why I waited. I do think that we have a situation in Milton where it is allowed to have a feral cat. They're given protection, but they have to have a current rabies shot. We had a rabid fox come down to a colony there. There's cats that do not have a current rabies shot. So I think it's important if we get ahead of the curve, if Newcastle County would say it's great for feral cats to be in our county, they must be currently vaccinated in order to provide that level of protection for our public, because an unvaccinated cat is at risk to carry rabies, which is deadly to humans. So if Newcastle County could look at passing an ordinance that if a cat has been spayed and neutered, it has a current rabies shot, its ears tip, it's safe to be amongst our community. If that cat owner or custodian cannot provide proof of rabies, then the cat has to be given a current rabies shot, or the owner is fined for not having it. So I think that would help with our feral cat population, is allowing them to be here if they're spayed and neutered and vaccinated. The other thing is dogs in hot cars. The state of Delaware does not have a law specifically which offers immunity to a person who saves a dog from distress in a car. So if we had that on a county level, that would be awesome as well. Okay. That's all, unless you have any more questions.
Okay. We thank you. Any other question or comment from members of council? Okay, hearing none, any other questions or public comment at this point in time?
Mr. Chair?
Yes, Councilman
Weiner. Just let the record reflect that I
yes,
joined.
Yes, that is correct. Councilman Weiner is in attendance. Okay, we thank you. And
can I just say one other thing?
Sure,
You mentioned the officers that were named constables. In the state code, dog wardens are not allowed to carry guns. I believe it's the Delaware SPCA who is fighting for their cruelty officers to carry guns in both Newcastle and Sussex County. But in for our officers, we feel like it's more harmful for them to carry a gun in our situation. So we're getting them bulletproof vests, but we are not equipping them with guns.
OK. Councilman Tackett.
Mr. Chairman, we did talk about it briefly, and I don't know who's here. I don't know if Mr. Guy can or not, but I noticed, and actually what I sent to you, but for the first time since we've had this contract, County Executive Gordon swore in the animal control officers as constables, and that had never been done before under the contract.
Oh, Denrec. We were sworn in.
That was an issue brought up by the county. I'm Marlene Wade again. In 2012, there was an issue with the former administration as to whether the constables should have been sworn in. And for a while, correct me if I'm wrong, Bob, they had not been sworn in. There was a position in the law department that was unnecessary. That position changed in August 2012. The officers were sworn in under the previous animal control contract. Although when the first contract was entered, the officers were already sworn in by Denrec. So in response to the audit, the exact administration made sure that they would, as a continuing practice, swear in the constables who are doing animal control for Guest County. And I believe it was last week or 2 weeks ago, May 15th, I believe, 14th, the new officers that are dedicated to Newcastle County were sworn in by the county executive. So that has been the practice, started with the previous administration in response to the questions by the independent auditor.
It was my understanding, though, that when Denrec was swearing them in, I guess that empowered them to enforce the state laws, but it was actually determined that they needed to be sworn in by the county executive in order to actually give the enforcement mechanism for our county laws.
I think that's right.
I believe that's correct.
Okay.
I can't speak much further in detail about what happened in the previous administration.
Right.
But the state laws for dog control are under the county section. So we're responsible for the dog control and the dog control panel, which are state laws, quote unquote, but they're the county's responsibility as well as our code.
Great. Thank you, Director. Appreciate it. We're under other. Any other business? Co-Chairman Street.
Chairman, I'm going to be brief, and I'm addressing this primarily to our president tonight and asking for his consideration accordingly. But yesterday, I delivered a letter in lieu of a resolution for one of my classmates who passed away. Her name is Rosalind Smith. She's a former director of the Hocasset Community Center. And I would ask, Mr. President, if in your, as you open council meeting tonight, if you include in your moment of silence our prayers and thoughts to her family. And quite frankly, and I was really taken back at best when I was called about her passing. And that's because, in my view, and I've said it sitting in this chair before, more than anything else, I think her demise was a result of a broken heart. A broken heart, mother, she was a mother first, even though she was active in the community. But her son was the young man who had some mental health issues, stole a police car, and the Wilmington police shot 38 times. And then left him out in the middle of Harrison Street for hours at a time, like he was anything other than a mother's child. And the city of Wilmington in the Baker administration, that was one of the few cases that they vigorously defended. And so as she sought justice as a mother, that wasn't available to her. So in my opinion, more than anything else, her demise was brought about as a result of a broken heart. I've sat here and I've talked about the execution of Harry Smith by the Wilmington Police Department for some period of time. And I'm saying to you now as a council, I'm going to keep on talking about it because I'm going to do everything I can think of to see to it that no other mother ends up coming to that in terms of a broken heart and contributing to her demise. So folks may have a problem with that. I'm not asking you to acquiesce or support my perspective about it. Just asking you to, as we request a moment of silence, that you consider her family and what they've been through.
Thank you.
Thank you. Thank you, Council. Mr. President?
Yes, I will honor your request.
Thank you, Mr. President. Thank you, Councilman. Any other business? Hearing none, public comment? Seeing none?
Motion to adjourn.
Second.
Motion made and second adjourn. All those in favor signify by saying aye.
Aye.
All
right.
See everybody about 5 minutes.
5 minutes.
Yeah, he's ready. And thank you for the email.